The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the October issue of Scout Life. And we're going to begin today by reviewing October and its calendar. October 10th is National Face Your Fears Day. Send your phobias packing. October 16th is World Food Day in the United Nations. Find out how you can help raise awareness of world hunger at go.scoutlife.org/hunger. October 31st is Halloween. See page 5 for some candy facts and page 18 for jack-o'-lantern tips. The lollipop. Named after the racehorse, Lollipop was created in 1908. The Snickers bar was also named after a horse. October 30th is National Candy Corn Day. In 1975, Warheads became the first sour candy. They were created in Taiwan, in Asia, and brought to the United States in 1993. The Three Musketeers candy bar used to have three pieces. One was chocolate, one was vanilla, and one was strawberry. The world's oldest candy bar is Fry's Chocolate Cream, created in 1866. It's still around. And cotton candy, first called Fairy Floss, was invented in 1897 by a candy maker and a dentist. The Golden Touch. This tale features a greedy king, a furry goat man, golden bathtubs, and a poorly worded wishes. King Midas was a ruler who wasn't just rich. He was filthy rich. Midas was the king of a wealthy country called Persia. Besides the fact that he was rolling in dough, the king was obsessed beyond measure in other ways. He had a beautiful palace, plenty of food and drink, and a lovely daughter. But King Midas always wanted more. He was obsessed with gold. His favorite thing to do was to sit in his palace and count his gold coins over and over again. The rumor was that King Midas even filled up his bathtub with gold coins so that he could bathe in them. One afternoon, King Midas was sitting in his room counting his gold when he heard a noise coming from outside his bedroom window. Someone was snoring just outside of his chambers. At first, Midas was annoyed. Which one of his lousy servants had fallen asleep on the job? But when he peered out the window, Midas was shocked to find a satyr sleeping soundly in a bed of flowers directly below his bedroom window. A satyr is a woodland spirit that is part man, part goat. But instead of being freaked out at the discovery of a goat man in his garden, King Midas was delighted. That's because he knew that satyrs are associated with the gods, specifically Dionysus. Dionysus was known for having a good time and throwing a fun party, and he truly loved his satyrs. They traveled with him everywhere he went and were his biggest supporters. Midas knew that if he returned the missing creature to Dionysus, he would likely be rewarded. He started to daydream about all the gold Dionysus would give him as a way to thank him for returning his beloved satyr. Midas pulled out all the stops. He gave the satyr a beautiful room with a comfortable bed to sleep in and let him live in luxury for 10 days. On the 11th day, Midas decided it was time to return the satyr to Dionysus. "Dionysus," he cried, "I have something that belongs to you." And just like that, Dionysus appeared. He smiled wide when he saw that his satyr was safe and well cared for. A satyr is a woodland spirit that is part man, part goat. But instead of being freaked out at the discovery of a goat man in his garden, King Midas was delighted.
I fell asleep, and King Midas found me," the satyr explained. "He gave me a comfortable room and fed me delicious food. It was wonderful."
Dionysus looked at Midas closely. Not many men would show so much hospitality to a satyr.
"Thank you, King Midas. I appreciate your service. I will not forget it.
Dionysus was turning to leave when Midas yelled out, Wait!
Aren't you forgetting something? Maybe a reward? Midas squeaked.
There it is, thought Dionysus, the real reason for his hospitality.
What is it that you seek? Dionysus asked.
I will grant you one wish. Midas was thrilled. He thought about asking for a large boat to sail across the seas, or maybe a horse that could run at lightning speed, perhaps true love for his darling daughter. But no, for Midas it always came back to one thing, gold.
I wish for everything I touch to be turned to gold, he proclaimed.
Dionysus paused. You want everything you touch to be turned to gold?
Everything you touch, he repeated. Yes, Midas exclaimed, already imagining his golden bed and golden floors and golden chairs.
As you wish, Dionysus replied, and with that he vanished, disappearing into the hillside along with the satyr. Midas sprinted back to his palace, eager to test out his new powers. On the way, he stopped to pick a flower in his garden. He watched with amazement as the flower turned to gold.
Giddy with glee, Midas ran inside and pulled out a chair to sit in. It also turned to gold. This is the best, King Midas yelled. I am rich, richer than rich. I am the king of gold.
He ran around his palace touching random objects. A candlestick,
poof, gold.
A rug,
poof, gold. His pillow, poof, gold.
Then Midas went to his favorite place of all, his bathtub. When he touched the sides, he watched in amazement as the marble slowly began to turn to gold. He now had a golden bathtub that he quickly filled up with golden coins. For Midas, life simply could not get any better than this. After all the excitement, King Midas was hungry. He went to grab a grape from the fruit bowl on the counter.
Crunch!
Midas screamed in pain.
He had cracked his tooth. What was the grape made of?
He spit it out into his hand.
It was a golden grape.
Oh, yes, Midas chuckled. It turned into gold because I touched it. And although Midas was amused at first, the more time passed, the more frustrated he became. Eventually hungry, Midas was in despair. Upon hearing her father crying, his daughter rushed into the room and embraced him. Suddenly, she tensed. When Midas pulled away to see what was wrong, he was horrified to see that she had turned into a golden statue. Midas ran out of his palace as fast as he could, heading to the place where he last saw Dionysus.
Dionysus! He screamed to the sky, Dionysus!
King Midas had finally realized that there was no more to life than gold, and that there was more to life than gold. He had all the gold he could ever hope for, yet had never been so unhappy. He would rather live on the street with his daughter than live in a golden palace without her.
I know what's important now, and it's not gold. Please help me, Midas cried.
Dionysus appeared and looked at him carefully. He supposed Midas had learned his lesson after all. Go to the river Pactolus and wash your hands. When you do, the curse will be lifted. Midas ran to the river and immersed both of his arms in the water. He scrubbed and scrubbed and scrubbed until he could see the gold flowing from his hands. When Midas was convinced that the curse was lifted, he rushed home and grabbed the golden statue of his daughter. He sobbed in gratitude when she came to life in his hands. He ran around the palace, touching all of the golden items, restoring everything to its original form. King Midas was true to his word. From that day forward, his greed and gluttony came to an end. He was no longer obsessed with gold. He was a loving father and a faithful king. Despite the incident with his golden touch, King Midas became a great ruler who served his people and country well for the rest of his days. excerpt from Greeking Out, epic retellings of classic Greek myths, an official podcast tie-in from National Geographic, go.scoutlife.org/Greeking Out. Ahead of the Carve, pages 18 and 19, a Halloween tradition connects Scouts, BSA, and Cub Scouts. Here on the picture of page 18 at the top left, we have Luke Dorr washes dirt off a pumpkin. On the right, Ty Lawman labels his carved pumpkin before the judging. And down at the bottom right corner, we have Owen Antolik works on removing the pumpkin stem. And on the left, Noah Gherkin, an arrow of lightning Cub Scout, studies his pumpkin. One-eyed monsters, snaggletooth ghouls, and even an adorable Grogu sat along a sidewalk staring at a group of scouts last October. The scouts inspected each and picked their favorites. It was easy to enjoy the monstrous sights before them. They were, after all, the scouts' creation. Every year, Link Troops 3589 and 5589 of Victoria, Minnesota, host a pumpkin carving contest the day before Halloween. It's fun to hang out with friends while preparing for the holiday, says Star Scout Owen Antolik, age 12. Smashing gourd time. One of the troop's families owns a pumpkin patch and provides 100 pumpkins for the activity. The scouts spend an afternoon carving pumpkins and enjoying hot chocolate and cookies. The pumpkins are judged, and the winners take home festive trophies. But the activities serve as more than a fun day with friends. The annual event also connects the troop with PAC 3589. Arrow of Light scouts are invited to participate, a gesture that can help recruit them to cross over into the troops. They are eligible for pumpkin carving trophies, too, as our siblings. You get to meet other people, like the scouts crossing over, says Amelia McEthan, 12, a Star Scout. That's fun. A cut above. Eagle Scout Max Worthington, 14, didn't have a plan for his jack-o'-lantern. He wasn't alone. I think most of us winged it, says Life Scout Sophia Reeves, age 15, and that's how we ended up with funnier designs. Each scout had 1 hour to cut their design into a pumpkin. Many went with a classic toothy expression, while others tried more gruesome looks. One of the scouts brought pottery tools. She didn't carve holes but sculpt into the face like she was whittling, says Star Scout Silas Bixby, age 15. It was unique. Wearing gloves helped cut down all the mess for those who carved holes and scooped out the innards. Not all of the scouts threw away the swishy insides. Silas sorted out the seeds to take home and roast for a snack. All the scouts took home their jack-o'-lanterns to display for Halloween. Top left-hand corner on page 19, Ilse Hudson, Swarze Thompson, and Paige Thomas, all of the Fearless Falcons Patrol, carved their pumpkins. On the bottom right, Mason Reeves shows off his creation. Dozens of carved pumpkins were lined up to be judged. The perfect pumpkin. Pick a pumpkin that works for you. You might like to transform a big, round pumpkin into a jack-o'-lantern, or maybe you want your orange creation to be lopsided. Embrace your creativity. To help extend the life of your jack-o'-lanterns, look for a few things. Pick a pumpkin that isn't cracked and doesn't have soft spots. These are signs it's already decaying. Your pumpkin should also be firm. If it can be easily scratched, the pumpkin likely was picked too early and will rot faster. Also, cut into your gourd a day or two before Halloween. Pumpkins last only 3 to 7 days after they're carved. You can put Vaseline on the inside and it'll keep it from rotting, Owen says. If you're in warm weather, the pumpkin will rot faster. Scouting around, pages 20 and 21. Signs up! When someone holds up the scout sign, the room quickly gets quiet. Why? It's a reminder of what the sign means. To make the scout sign in Cub Scouts, raise your right arm straight up with your index and middle finger separated. These two fingers stand for the Scout Oath and the Scout Law. They also look like the sharp ears of the wolf, ready to listen to a killer, who is a good leader to a Cub Scout. In all other scouting programs, raise your right arm to shoulder height with your elbow bent at a right angle. Cover the nail of your pinky with your thumb and hold the three middle fingers of your hand upward and together. Your thumb and little finger touching represent the bond Scouts have throughout the world. The three fingers stand for the three parts of the Scout Oath: duty to God and country, duty to others, and duty to self. When the sign is raised, it's a silent reminder to follow the Scout Oath and the Scout Law by respectfully quieting down and listening. Nobody needs to yell. Signs up. The sign says it all. Field book facts. Find your way. If you were to pull out a smartphone and open a maps app, it would show where you were and which direction you were facing. Can you get the same useful information without a digital aid? Absolutely. Grab a map. Better yet, get a compass, too. You can orient a map by aligning it with the topography, the features it represents. Look for hills, trailheads, and bodies of water, and hold the map so it matches the landscape around you. Most maps indicate which way is north. With your map matching your topography, you should know which direction you're facing based on the map's cardinal directions. For better accuracy, or if you don't have easily identifiable landmarks near you, pull out your compass. Rotate the housing of the compass until north lines up with the direction of the travel arrow on the base plate. Place the long edge of the compass along the map's border. Turn the compass and map together until the compass needle lines up inside the orienteering arrow. Note that this method doesn't account for declination, but the map should be oriented accurately enough for a general lay of the land. Troop Paddle 21, Miles on Overnight Campout. As Troop 215 played a little game of wiffle ball near the shore of the Delaware River, the scouts realized that they had a spectacular spectator on the other side, a bald eagle. "He wants a bird's-eye view of our ball game," they joked. It was one of about 20 eagles the scouts spotted during their 21-mile canoe trek through the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area, which stretches across the state lines of New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Not bad for an overnight campout. Last summer, the troop, based in Long Beach, New York, packed their gear in their canoes and made sure it would all stay dry as they headed downstream. On the first day, they paddled more than 13 miles, stopping to go for a swim, skip rocks, and check out the wildlife. They saw more animals, including frogs and black bear, than people on the trip. After they set up camp and ate dinner, they hung their food in bear bags to prevent animals from raiding their stuff. The next morning, a rain cloud had moved into the area. The scouts quickly ate breakfast and waited for a break in the rain to get back on the water. That break never came, so the troop launched the canoes and paddled 8 miles in the rain to end the point. The hunt is on. The dozen satellites circle Earth each day. Two dozen satellites circle the Earth each day, transmitting signals back to the surface. These signals from the Global Positioning System, GPS satellites, help people on the ground precisely figure out their location. This system, originally intended for the military, can be accessed by everyone. All you need is a GPS receiver that can gather this information. You can buy a handheld device or download a geocaching app. Using this information from the device or app, you can go geocaching, which is basically a huge treasure hunt. Search for caches, which are filled with goodies in a logbook. When you find a cache, sign your name in the logbook and trade out a trinket. You can put in a toy, keychain, patch, or extra scout essential item, except food. It can be a lot of fun. Before you go, learn how to use your device or app. With your parents' permission, visit geocaching.com to search for caches. Pack your scout essentials, which includes a map and compass.
When you geocaching, remember to be courteous, safe, and environmentally conscious. Use the buddy system, respect private property, and follow Leave No Trace guidelines. See online version of Scout's BSA program features for troops and crews at go.scoutlife.org/program/features. Scouts whose troops choose the suggested program theme for October can learn more in the geocaching merit badge pamphlet. Now on to merit badge minute, page 22. Some ideas for your next merit badge adventure. Backpacking. The following should go on every backpacking trek. Water bottle. Drink plenty of fluids, even in cold weather. Use a lightweight, unbreakable container with a secure lid. Extra clothing. Temperatures can change during a trip. Have the clothing you need to for warm days and cooler nights. Sun protection. Use sunscreen and wear lip balm with SPF of at least 30. Apply early in the day and reapply often. Flashlight. A lightweight flashlight, a headlight, lamp, or a rugged pen light should serve all your backcountry needs. Bring extra batteries, too. Rain gear. Rain can come in a hurry, and getting your clothes drenched is more than just uncomfortable. It can lead to hypothermia. Have your rain gear easily accessible. Map and compass. A topographic map will help you identify landmarks along the way. Review your route finding skills before you leave so you'll be sharp on the trail. Matches and fire starters. Store matches or lighters in resealable plastic bags. Plan so that you won't need an open fire, but be prepared to build one in an emergency. First aid kit. A few items will allow you to treat scratches, blisters, and other minor injuries. They should also allow you to provide initial care while waiting for help for more serious injuries. Trail food. Bring more than you think. In case you get stuck or lost in the woods, make your own trail mix. Bring a small bag of granola and pack a handful of energy bars. Pocket knife. A useful all-purpose tool. Use it to cut a cord or pieces of food. Whittle a steak, tighten a screw, and more. Keep your knife sharp and clean. Radio. Amateur radio operators use their communication skills to spread word of emergency, to conduct search and rescue operations, and to just have fun. Whether you're broadcasting critical information or just trying to talk to a friend, it's important that you be understood. That's why radio operators sometimes use a phonetic alphabet. Words that stand for each letter. Let's say your dog, Ben, is lost, and you want to let everyone know that he'll come if you simply call his name. If there's static on the line and you spell the dog's name as B-E-N, it could be heard as D-A-N, and your radio operating buddies would be wandering the neighborhood calling the wrong dog. However, it would be much harder for someone to misunderstand if you said, Bravo Echo November, the phonetic alphabet spelling of Ben. B, Bravo. G, Golf. D, Delta. T, Tango. Y, Yankee. X, X-ray. For more information about this radio, go to go.scoutlife.org/merit badge. Basketry. Long before backpacks, there were baskets. Throughout recorded history, people have used native plants and vines to make baskets to carry and store water, food, and valuables. For your basketry merit badge, you'll study four types. Plated baskets are made with flat strips of reed passing over and under flat stakes. Coiled baskets use an inner core of natural material wrapped with a soft, flexible material. Ribbed baskets use flat or oval reed to create a sturdy framework. And wicker baskets
are made with round reed or any other round flexible material that can be interwoven into a rigid frame. How about a comic? Lion Pride, Light Fright. So here we see a, like on a back screen, one of the lions have two fingers there. Next, oh, they're playing. Now in the shadows. Now in the shadows. Oh, one of the lions. Next, one. Now, uh-oh. It's a monster. There, out of there. How about Tiger's Adventures? It's getting dark. You guys ready for some trick-or-treating? Sure are, Dad. We just have to get our treat bucket. They're off. Bucket? Just one? When it's a giant one. Ready when you are, Dad. Hoo-hoo-hoo. A big bucket for treats. How about a little thinking grin before? Edward, what's a computer's favorite dessert? Sam, tell me. Edward, cookies. That's from Edward B. in Rawlings, Maryland. Up here, what do you call the mother of a monster? Billy, tell me. Up here, momster. That's from Abir M. in Cupertino, California. Dad, what sound does a witch's car make? Ain, I don't know. Dad, broom, broom. Ain, Dad, you're putting me to sleep. Brandon, what is the worst season of the year for Humpty Dumpty? Brad, I don't know. Brandon, fall. That from Brandon G. in Bremerton, Washington. Tom, what do you call a meteor that's been struck by another meteor? Travis, I'm not sure. Tom, starstruck. That's from Tom D. in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. A Puny Book, The History of Forestry by Timber. That's from Isaac Z. in Russell, Pennsylvania. We run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.